All right, joining us now, our good friend, the lead official out there on the LPGA Tour, was caught in the crucible of the last Solheim Cup. Dan Miceli, welcome back into the golf shop.
Hi, Mike. How you doing? Good to be back with you guys.
Yeah, very excited about the Solheim Cup. I mean, we were out at the PGA Championship all last week, and I got to be honest with you, as exciting as that was, I just couldn't stop thinking about the Solheim Cup. Why is it that this competition with the ladies never seems to disappoint?
Oh, I think it's the same with the men with the Ryder Cup. Anytime you can play for your country, the players are more engaged. The players have a more passionate feel about the competition. Because it's an exhibition, quote-unquote an exhibition. And it's among most of these players are friends, just like the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
But they really do enjoy the competition. The whole patriotic, you know, playing for your country thing is pretty cool. So I think that's why it brings out the best and why the ladies and this competition is so exciting.
Yeah, I wonder if it's somehow liberating. I mean, as professional golfers, all of these men and women are independent contractors, and they're out there week in and week out really trying to pay the bills. But this is different. They're not out there playing for a check. They're out there playing for their country. And do you think it is possibly they can take a deep breath and enjoy it a little bit more?
Well, I think it brings them back to their college days, Mike, you know, when they were playing as a team, traveling as a team, dining as a team. It brings back a lot of these players did play college golf together and played on the same teams. And there were some healthy rivalries between some of the players playing for different colleges. So I think that aspect of it just brings it all back, and that's why they enjoy it so much.
Well, Dan, our listeners know we had you on last time after the Solheim Cup when you were caught in the mess with Allison Lee and Suzanne Pettersen. Is one of your goals for this week to have less TV time?
That's my goal every week, Mike, to be honest with you. of course. What you always want is you want the focus always to be on the players and their skill. These are highly skilled players. They play at a level that most of us just dream about playing at, and you really want the competition to be all about them and all about the skill of the players, and that's what we're hoping for. And we just had a rules meeting with all the players and went over a few things, and we touched on a few things that have happened in the past. We just want to avoid that from happening in the future.
Well, Dan, is it different to officiate match play? I mean, are there points of emphasis that are different than a regular stroke play tournament? That, I mean, obviously you probably just communicated that to the players, but tell our listeners how it's different to officiate a match play tournament.
Well, the good thing about a match play in our situation is we have a referee with every match. So the referee can handle anything, any questions, any procedural questions can all be handled by the referee right there in the match. So that's one aspect of it. And as most of your listeners know, they play match play more than they play stroke play, I could imagine. The rules, the penalty statements are different. It's more of a loss of hole for a significant breach instead of the two-stroke penalty. There's no such thing as a two-stroke penalty in match play. It's only one-stroke penalties or loss of hole. And so there's lots of different aspects of it. And then in the four-ball match play, a partner could breach a rule. Let's say she hits a wrong ball, for instance. Well, playing a wrong ball in match play is loss of hole. Well, only the person who hit the wrong ball has breached that rule, so her partner is unaffected. So there are lots of different aspects of match play that are different from stroke play. And so that's why the officiating is a little bit different, just understanding some of those different nuances.
So was there a point of emphasis, I mean, based on, it had to come up in conversation based on what happened last time, the communication of concessions and things like that to be as clear as possible, is that just an assumption that these kinds of things won't happen?
No, we tell them, we ask them to be as clear, as loud as they can, with their partners their opponents, with their concessions, and we also tell them now, do not pick up your golf ball, touch your golf ball until you hear or you've checked to make sure it's been conceded, to avoid what happened at the U.S. Girls Amateur. So we try to emphasize those things to avoid any problems, so that it does come down to just the players and their skill to determine the outcome of this contest.
Yeah, do you think in a competition like this, they're actually watching their opponents more closely than they might in a regular tournament where they're so focused on themselves? So the likelihood of seeing a Lexi Thompson situation where something gets called in off of TV or someone notices something, they're really watching each other anyway. And so I would imagine that any infraction, they're going to pick it up long before anybody else does. Is that a false assumption on my part?
No, I think there's some truth to that. I don't think they scrutinize them too harshly, but I do think they do watch them a little bit more, because, I mean, obviously you're trying to win every point you can for your team. So if somebody does something incorrectly, you're going to bring it up because you want to win your point. You want to win your match. So, yeah, I think there's more scrutiny from the players to each other, as different from stroke play. Stroke play, they just kind of walk around, don't worry about it too much, which is when you can have situations like what happened at A&A.
Yeah, and well, now we're talking to Dan Maselli, our good friend, LPGA official, and I'm with you for this week. You know, as much as I love you, I'd be okay if you're like a good left tackle. You're not noticed until you do something
exactly
wrong, right?
Right?
Yeah. I mean, I used to say,
but what's your name mentioned at all?
Yeah, I think that one of the hardest jobs, a good boxing official actually rarely shows up on TV, and that's very
exactly
difficult to do. So, kudos to you. And let's talk a little bit about the course. You've been out there now. Our listeners are not familiar with Des Moines Golf and Country Club, and there's good reason for that. It's, you know, it hasn't been on the international stage like this in quite some time, especially with the ubiquitous coverage we're going to get. Tell us a little bit about the course, its characteristics, and you know, we had I'm trying to remember who we had. It's Scott Howe on, the head pro out there, and he made it sound pretty clear that we were going to try to set this thing up for some USA advantage. But how does the course, you know, what should our folks look for in terms of characteristics on this course? Is it a bomber's course? Is it a game manager's course? Is it going to have heavy rough? Is it going to be live? Ball's going to roll out? Tell us a little bit about the course itself.
Sure. Des Moines Golf and Country Club is a 36-hole facility designed by Pete Dye. We're using a combination of holes. We're not using one 18 or another 18. This is actually the original layout is what we're using for this competition. Rough is going to be long and thick. Fairways are generous. So if it's not like a tight driving hole, they're going to be able to bomb it a little bit. Green speeds are going to run in the 11.5 range. So we've got some undulation on these greens. So if you get above the hole, you're going to have to be a little careful, a little defensive. But if you get the ball in the right position on the greens, you can be aggressive and try to make some birdies. That's one of the great parts about four ball is if your partner is in with a par, you can be a little bit more aggressive with your birdie putt. So those aspects of the game are going to be in play. It's really a great parkland golf course. Been around for a long time. Water won't come into play too much. In a few holes it will. But mostly it's going to be all about that approach shot and the putt, how you arrive and how you putt. Those are going to be the keys to this competition and winning on this golf course.
Yeah, I mean, normally we look at things like the Green Mile here at Quail Hollow that we had last week, but in match play, sometimes these matches are ended and decided earlier. So are there places sort of in that 14 to 16 range in those holes where we can look for big scoring swings, do you think?
Hole 14, I think, is going to play a big role because it's a good par 3 that's going to be played for various lengths. So there'll be opportunities to make birdies there. And then hole 15, will be a reachable par 5 on certain days. That also will be a very interesting hole to watch as they're coming down the stretch. We have a very interesting hole here. It happens early in the round, hole 3. that is amazing. It's a hole, 165-yard hole, but it has two, basically, it's one green, but it's like two greens with a neck on the right-hand side and a bunker in the middle. So when the hole locations are on the back part of that green, it's going to be very interesting to see how they attack that. And then when balls are on, when the hole location is in the front part of that green or on that front section of the green, look for a lot of birdies and things to happen there. So I think those are a few holes to watch as you're coming down the stretch.
And if you were doing stroke, I mean, if you were doing alternate shot, for example, is there definitely going to be a strategy there? I mean, who do you want hitting first on the first tee?
Well, I think the players decide that. Obviously, the players do decide that. But, yeah, they're going to look at the, you know, when you're playing alternate shot or foursomes, as we call it, one player's going to tee off, going to start every even hole. One person's going to start every odd hole. So they're going to look at the holes. And as they go through their practice rounds, they're looking at, okay, if I'm partnered with so-and-so, I'm going to want the odd holes. She's going to want the even holes, whatever their strengths or weaknesses are. It could be length. It could be accuracy. But they're going to look at that and say, okay, I think we'll be better off with the odd holes. I'll be better off with the even holes, and off they'll go.
All right, well, we're talking to Dan Maselli, our favorite LPGA official who's out in Des Moines for the Solheim Cup. And Jake, our producer, had a question. He asked me about you, actually, that I couldn't answer, so why not go right to the source? How does one become an official on the LPGA Tour? How did this happen?
anybody with an aptitude in rules can go through the USGA PGA rules workshops. If you score 92 or higher on their 100 question test, you are considered employable.
okay.
And
that's the basics. All right.
my history is pretty quick. I was a club pro for years and years and years. A friend of mine started a mini tour. He knew I had some aptitude with the rules, asked me to help out. I did just a part-time basis, started to like it, looked at it as a career path, was very fortunate enough to work with the folks on the Canadian Tour before the PGA Tour bought it. And then I was very fortunate to get this job with the LPGA. We only have 8 full-time rules officials on the LPGA Tour. So to get one of those 8 spots is, I'm very grateful for that.
Well, and you're very, very good at what you do, and we certainly appreciate your willingness to come on and chat about this stuff with us, and we'll have to have you on soon again, and talk about how the season is going to unfold and what's going on maybe for rules changes in the future.
Absolutely. Anytime, Mike.